Good Friday morning. It is the first Friday of summer, but you would not know that if you looked outside today. Getaway Friday, June the 23rd. Hey, I got it right that time. June the 23rd, 2023, 6:23:23, 17 minutes past the hour, and it's Over the Back Fence with myself and Pastor Steve Whitaker. You can hear this show every Friday morning, 9:15 until 10 a.m. live, repeated on Sunday morning, 8:15 until 9 a.m., and then Wednesday and Thursday afternoon from 3:15 until 4. Check out the website for archived issues. It's under the first show under Program Archives, WWGH1071.com, or check out the Facebook page before the day is over, and you will see the show there, and you can listen live. Pastor Whitaker, here we are on a Friday morning. How are you?
I'm doing great. Hey, a couple things I want to tell you as we get started this morning. One is that we have Prospects Bible School will be going on here in about 2 weeks, about three weeks till it starts. If you would like a registration form, please contact our church. It's 740-494-2222. Give us your name and information. I'll make sure that you get that. Also, I want to let you know that I'm still a huge supporter of Jeff's Bicycle Shop and Mid-Ohio Insurance Solutions, both quality, good places that you can trust. And let's have a great show.
You know, and it's very interesting. We just came off the drug bust story, but it led us into a conversation during the break. And it's a conversation we've been having partially on this show for a few weeks now. And it's about money. And what we were talking about were the tentacles of this drug bust. 31 people from the area will now be in jail, and their income will be shut down. Now, that's a very good thing because their income was illegal, and that's not good. But what about the women they were living with? What about the kids they might have? What about the rent they were paying, the food they were buying, the utilities they were paying? What are the ramifications this morning? And also, not just with drugs, in general, what is going on in society now in the case of where money rules the world? Money equals happiness. No money equals trouble.
Well, I'll tell you, let me go back to Scripture. People often say money is the root of all evil, and the Bible never says that. Scripture tells us that the love of money is the root of all evil. And I think that's where you... Money, things that we barter with, and this has been since the beginning of civilization, people have had things they bartered with. Whether it was a particular food or whatever, they barter with things. And of course, money is what we barter, what we trade with. But the love of it, the desire to have more and more, feeds something that that I'm not sure we need fed.
Well, the thing of it is, for me, is that I get it. I'm not naive enough to think that you don't need money to pay your rent or your house payment. You've got to eat. You want to have a roof over yourself. I get that. I understand that. And yes, people want to take vacations in the summer, and people don't want to have to run up credit card debt and all that sort of thing. I understand that. My problem is when you become dependent on somebody else for not only that emotional happiness, but that financial happiness. That's where I have the problem.
Because that happiness is never sustained.
It's not real.
It's not real. I think that we fooled ourselves into thinking we have to have everything. And I don't know where the people that run our society have decided that money solves everything. But if you think about it, even legislatively, we want to throw money at things where sometimes what we need to do is people need to learn to budget. They need to learn to toe the line. They need to learn to... You know, it's very interesting. When I got out of school, and I got married very young, I mean, 6 months out of high school, I was married. And we had an instant family. And anyway, to make a long story short, I knew that I had a family to support. Now, obviously, you didn't marry my wife for money. She didn't have any either. But the point was, when we got in a bind, I knew I had to scrape up some work, find something to do. Probably one of the reasons I learned to do so many things as a young person was out of necessity. And we're taking away that necessity. And people think that in many cases that they are entitled to have things that we never would have dreamed we were entitled to have. I talked to a, I was getting eyeglasses the other day, and I was waiting on my exam, and I was talking to a guy with a construction company that he's getting ready to retire next year, and he said, I just can't take it anymore. He said, I'm a babysitter. He said, unless somebody's 45 years old plus, he goes, I won't even hire him anymore. This is a huge construction company that pays extremely well, has wonderful benefits. And he said that everyone we hire now comes into the job looking for, what are you going to give me, and what, how little do I have to do to get it? And where did that change happen, Scott?
Well, that's a good question. I don't know where that happened because I'm still trying to figure out. See, I have the cardboard box test, and I talked a little bit about this okay. before we went on the air. I always think that when I'm around somebody, whether it's a friendship or a relationship, I don't think about, are they going to buy dinner? Are they going to buy tickets to this? Are they going to do that? You know what I think about? I think, would I be willing to live in a cardboard box with this person? And if the answer is yes, then I know there might be something there. There might be some true, genuine feelings. Not that I want to live in a cardboard box. Not that I ever have lived in a cardboard box. But if I can do that, then I know there's something. But if my reason for liking them is driven by activities and finances, then I know maybe not.
You're right. You remember the song, I'm going to take us way back. This is before you, Scott. I'm trying to remember who did the song. Even though we ain't got money, I'm so in love with you, honey. Yeah, remember that?
Yeah, I remember that.
You know, that thought is, you know, you're right. The cardboard box test, that makes sense. Yeah. But, you know, relationships should be that strong. I think before anybody even thinks about getting married, they should ask themselves that question. Could I live in a cardboard box with this person? You know, if it is based on what you drive and what you have and what you can give me or what I can get you, or that's a horrible place to start because, you know, things that are not real, things that are not true, things that are not, things that are superficial, they die off, they get worn, they tarnish. You know, another thing that says in the Bible is all those things in the end we burn up like wood, hay, and stubble. You know, it says, don't lay up your treasures on earth where moth and rust will destroy. We're supposed to work towards some eternal value and love and care and trust God for our daily lives, and in turn show people the love that He shows us. And you know, I know that to some people it probably sounds like, oh, Pastor, that sounds like such pie in the sky. But have you ever tried it?
Well, have you ever thought, take something, and any bond that people have outside of family. Now, it could be a friendship. I'm not even necessarily talking about relationship. It could be a friendship. If you took the trips out, the expensive trips, if you took the concerts out of it, if you took the events that cost money out of that equation, does the bond still work?
What if you took out the beer and partying on the weekend and the drugs?
That's
a huge part of it today. It really is. Oh, we go out and party and have a great time on the weekend. I mean, that's the attitude of so many people. And I'm not talking about just young people. I know people that don't come, that have stopped coming to church because they had to make a decision between, am I going to go out and party with my friends because I feel wrong about it when, you know, the rest of the time maybe I shouldn't be doing some of this stuff, or am I going to live a life that's going to better myself, better my family, be a good example to my children? You know what, I'm tired of feeling guilty, I'm just going to go party. And then you watch your kids go downhill, you watch your family have all these problems, your kids follow suit, they're watching, their kids watch you. A friend of mine posted something on Facebook and it was their little boy walking down a corn row looking at the ground with his hands behind his back. And they said that they were arrowhead hunting, and they arrowhead hunt a lot. And she said that I never understood why my husband was so much better at hunting arrowheads until I watched him one day. And he would walk with his hands behind his back looking down at the ground, and he'd focus on what he's looking at. And they said, and this was a picture of their little boy doing it, and said, remember, they're watching you. And they do. And, you know, we asked, you know, a couple minutes ago, you said, I don't know where when this started, how it started. I think it started with the generation prior to me. There was so much affluency that we never had. And unfortunate, a lot of it was what I would call pseudo-affluency. We had credit for the first time. And people were able to buy things for their kids that they never earned. You know, see, when I was a kid, Scott, is when all this was going on. My parents still had the old-fashioned values, plus we were dirt poor. But if I wanted something, and I did, I knew that I had to work for it and find a way to get it. When it snowed, I shoveled drives. In the summertime, I'd mow lawns, or I'd find someone that needed work done, or whatever those things were to get things. And when that left, when we started just buying things because we wanted to see our kids happy, because one, we were working around the clock to have these things and pay off the credit, I think that we just got lost in the mix.
Well, have you ever noticed our society is set up like this now? If I want to show affection or that I like you just as a human being,
buy me something.
I take you out to dinner and I pick up the tab. I go and I buy you a new t-shirt. I go and I buy you a new pair of shoes.
Isn't that true?
That's what it is. This is how we show affection in society. This is what we do. And I think to myself, now wait a second. Now is that really how we show affection? Is that really how we translate that we like somebody? And do we really like them when we're doing that? I don't really understand that.
I had a guy and his little boy bring me on a Sunday morning, bring me a gallon baggie of crappie they just caught. And I think that was a very kind gesture. And it was, they didn't go out and buy something. They knew that I liked that. And they, you know, those are kind things and good things to do. But you're right. It's like, oh, look what so-and-so just bought me.
What about thoughtfulness? What about writing somebody a note? What about getting somebody a card? What about making somebody breakfast? What about, you know, surprising somebody with something that doesn't cost any money, something you made?
I've got a friend that I met through a lady at the church, and he lives in Columbus, and he would come to church quite often with her for a while, but he doesn't anymore. And he's a very kind man, and we got to be kind of friends, you know. But anyways, interesting, Scott. This man has never given me a dime. He's never bought me a gift. But I have never seen anyone as prolific in sending me cheer up cards. How you doing? Miss you, Pastor. Great. How you been? I get this stuff constantly. I just got one for my birthday the other day. And this guy never forgets me, but he's never bought me one thing. And I so appreciate him.
Oh, absolutely. I think you do appreciate those people.
But I don't mind when someone buys me something. I think it's nice, but that should never be a basis for a relationship.
No, and does that translate into affection? We know that the person's doing it to show affection, clearly. But is it translated that way? I think it is 90% of the time. I think the person getting the gift goes, oh, they must really like me. They just bought me such and such. Okay.
Yeah, I think so. I mean, I know that, unfortunately, I know a lot of young women, you know, wow, you know, look what he just bought me. He is so great, you know. They're gonna, and guys, I had to laugh. I had to repost this yesterday. It was a picture of a guy with an old Model T, I think, with great big, like 27-inch wheels on it, like you'd put on these cars today, and it said, the first time a boyfriend uses girlfriend's tax money to buy big wheels for his car. And I just, it was so hilarious. The thought was, you know, hey, look what they gave. They bought me. They gave me. They allowed me to get. Shame on that. How about walks in the woods?
Exactly.
How about let's go jog together. Let's go sit and talk. Let's go. What kind of things do you like? What can you enjoy? Let's go get an ice cream cone. We'll both buy our own. You know, whatever the case is, that's where true relationships build.
Oh, sit and talk. We can't do that anymore.
No.
That is trouble because everybody's got their phone out and everybody's trying to connect with somebody else and return a message to somebody. We cannot sit and talk. That would be horrible.
I'm guilty of it. I'll be honest with you. It's so hard not to glance when people you hear the phone beep, you know, someone message you. It's so hard to look at. I'll be honest, most of my time on social media, and it's probably wasted time, is reading things and watching short clips of things that are interesting. Not exactly the, you know, on their back and forth with people and counting likes and all that kind of stuff. But, you know, I think that all of this goes back to it. Even, you know, I briefly talked to you before we got on the show about, you know, the House bill yesterday about, you know, come on, let's let these five-year-olds be five-year-olds for crying out loud. Quit trying to, they're too young to be deciding who they are sexually for crying out loud. You know, when my grandson Jonah was that age, he was running around with one of those stick horses with a horse head and a stick, galloping and whinnying, and he thought he was a horse for about 2 months. Another grandson of mine thought he was Curious George and talked like a monkey for about 6 months. You know, let's get back to some basic values and simplicity in this country across the board, and especially, I would say, with our relationships. Make them count for something. Young men and young ladies out there, you know, you were designed by a wonderful, loving God to be respected and not to be used like a piece of trash that's thrown away. It's so hard. I talk to you a lot. I spend a lot of time with teenagers. Matter of fact, I just baptized a wonderful boy the other day, and it was just a very thrilling day. We had a great service at Fulton Creek, an outside service, and then we had a baptism in the creek, and it was just a beautiful day. But anyway, I talk to so many young people, and they are literally afraid to get in a relationship because they're afraid they're going to really like the person, and the other person is going to go to the next good thing, or the next one that drives a better car, or has a nicer this, or has a nicer house. And it's like, you know, why do I want to get involved? And I'm just going to get my heart broke.
And there you go. It comes back to financials. Even at that age, it comes back to financials.
Okay, so Scott, we've got people on the air. I hope there's people out there listening. What do we suggest?
Well, you have to go to the person who is driven by the financials in that pairing, and somehow you've got to convince them that that is not the Band-Aid that you need. And I think that's almost impossible to do, because once you fall in that hole, you feel it's like a black hole of endlessness, because you feel, yeah, and that's why I say I'm not naive enough to believe that if you can't make your house payment, if you can't make your rent payment, if you can't buy food for yourself and everybody else in your household, that yes, you are going to be stressed and you're going to feel rough at times. But how do you translate that into not being dependent?
Part of the problem is, Scott, to be honest with you, is, dare I say, they've never been taught. If you're generationally coming out of that, it's very hard to change that mindset, because when you get in that situation, you're looking for the quickest bailout. And the truth is, like I said, when we were younger, I still go back to the winter, 1981, I think we had a recession, 80 or 81, and I was in the construction trades, and it stopped. I mean, overnight, it stopped. And I had a little boy home in diapers, and I had he had two older sisters. And I'm like, what am I going to do? Well, I found a guy that let us cut some firewood out of his woods for a share of the wood. It was snowing. I went out and shoveled dry. I did anything I could. But, you know, when it was all over with, I got back on my feet, and I wasn't embarrassed. I didn't owe anyone something. Someone wasn't going to throw it at back of my face that, look what I did for you when you were down and out, because I fought to get on top of it. And people have to learn, you're going to have so much more feeling of self-value and trusting of yourself if you can weather the storm, if you can work through the storm. The next time the storm comes, it's not going to be so devastating, because you know you did it once and you can do it again. But if you're constantly looking for that bailout's going to hurt. It's just like the bailout. that we had. Everyone felt great getting those checks for a while. I know people that, man, leave me laid off. I'm bringing in more money than I did when I was working. There were those that did that. But the long-term effect has been terrible. It has had a huge blow to our workforce. So many people got used to it. They don't want to go back to work. And there were all kind. So all I'm saying, those freebies aren't always so free. I know they were offering churches a lot of money in the bailout for, you know, staff, for operations, for all these things. We wouldn't take it. One, we didn't need it. But a lot of churches probably took it that probably didn't need it either. But the truth is that I didn't want them coming back to us 6 months down the road and say, okay, we gave you a bailout, now here's some things you're going to do. And not that that has happened or would happen, but it could happen. And it's the same thing with people. What do you mean? I've been putting you up for a year in this place. I gave you a car to drive. You're going to do what I say, how I want to do it, and how dare you tell me you're not. And that relationship, when a relationship is not based on true honesty and feelings, it's going to come back sour. It just does.
You know, isn't it funny? When, you know, you see these people who are in love, whether they're married or whatever it is, they're in love, everything's great, they're doing all these things, and then it ends. And you go to that person and you say, well, you know, tell me about such and such and such. And they start, usually it's a list. I took care of that person, I bought him a house, and look what they, well, hey, listen, if you did all that to get something, then sorry.
Scott, I'll tell you, this whole marriage thing where we've really fallen down is that true love involves truth and it involves commitment. Real marriage is a covenant relationship. It's a relationship that you make. In a covenant relationship, what it basically means is through the highs and lows, through everything, we're going to stay together and work together. And the reason that you saw in years past so many people that stayed together for long, I've been married for 45 years, is because it wasn't based on what you're going to do for me. It was based on the fact that I love this person, I'm married to this person, I made a decision to marry them. Now, regardless of the circumstances, we're going to stay together and we're going to work it out. And we've left that and we've gone to a materialistic marriage, like you just said, and a materialistic relationships. Well, the fun's wearing off, the cash is wearing off. How dare you? You know, did you see what I just bought you? That would be the first thing that would make me want to leave.
Well, the funny thing is, I think of relationships and marriages like the Constitution. here's a comparison that people will be ready for. Here's what I think of it like. Freedom of speech. Okay, people get freedom of speech wrong all the time because people think freedom of speech is there to protect popular speech. Popular speech doesn't need protected because it's popular. Nobody complains.
It's there to protect speech, period.
The minority speech, the little things that people say that bother people, that's what needs protecting, and that's what it protects. In a relationship in marriage, I believe it is not the big things that need protecting. The fun things, the trips, the concerts.
Yeah, they're fine.
You don't need protecting there. You're having a good time. What you need protecting is, do you have a conversation? Can you sit home on a Saturday night and just laugh with each other? That's what you need to work on.
When that person's sick, can you have compassion and be with them and beside them and help them through it?
Yeah, can you survive that? When you're not going somewhere every weekend, can you deal with them when they are having a downtime?
What happens when their looks start fading?
Oh, my.
Or they gain weight, whatever the case may be. What happens if they end up with a mental illness? What do you do? You know, if you love them, you hang in there
lose their job.
Oh, lose their job is huge. I've known people that have lost a good job and within 6 months the marriage is over. And the financial stress on, here's another thing that, you know, we're talking about money and it destroying. You know, most marriages break up. The if you talk to people in marriage, that's what is the biggest stress in your marriage, almost invariably it'll come back financial. We argue about money.
Oh, absolutely.
We argue. Why are you arguing about money? If money had the proper place in your value system, you wouldn't be arguing about it. Think about that.
Do you think that is, you know, I've noticed that people who grow up in homes where there's not a lot of money covet money more than people who grow up, I'm not saying rich homes, but people who grow up in homes where money was not the issue, they don't seem to covet money as much.
Yeah, that would be, now my experience, and I'm going to give you a personal experience, is because I grew up in a house where there was no money, and there's five of us, and there's some that covet. And there's some, money has never meant happiness to me. And I'll never have any money, no matter how much money I get, because I give it away. And when I buy things, I give them away. It's just, and I'm not patting myself on the back, Scott. I'm just saying that's my nature. That's what I want to do. I would rather have the joy of seeing someone else get it. Because with me, satisfaction is not money. And for instance, like going out to eat. If you go out to eat a lot, one thing you'll find out, I used to go out to eat. I worked with a guy on the road a lot, and he always wanted to go to places to eat. And I'll be honest with you, it gets boring. Those places get boring. You know, it got to the point where, man, just give me a nice cold lunch meat sandwich with some lettuce, tomato, and mayonnaise, I'm good to go, because I'm tired of these places. And so what I'm getting at is you can only eat so well. Clothing, you can only dress. I mean, how much clothing do you really need? If it's clean, if it's presentable, how much do you need? A car, you know what a car is? It's transportation. You know, and it's always been that way. I remember growing up, we were a family that had the oldest car in the church parking lot growing up. Because I guess my dad had the same attitude I did. A car was transportation. And you know, what do you do when that's your attitude? Well, you don't pay as much for insurance. You're not paying a huge car payment. On and on and on it goes. When you're not spending a ton on clothes. It's really funny. We grew up, Mom, you know, would hit Lazarus dollar days or whatever. The Lazarus, all the women would go down there and fight over everything. But anyway, you know, I grew up with my kids and their family. We hit the Goodwills and the Salvation Army. And then they became popular. A lot of people go there. But our kids to this day, when they need a pair of jeans or something, the first place they'll do is hit those places, because why do I want to go out and spend $40 on a pair of pants that I can spend $4 on or $5 on that are just as good? And to have that mindset, there's a lot of freedom in that, Scott. Don't you think that bills are binding?
Well, certainly. And I think, you know, and again, I'm not saying these people who are doing this are bad people. They're not bad people, by and large. The problem is that for some reason in their life, their priorities got messed up. And because their priorities are messed up, they don't really understand what happiness is all about, and therefore they will never find, and this sounds altruistic, true happiness. They will find temporary happiness.
It's all material. We live in a materialistic society. Look at our commercials on TV, what you got to have. Kids today, I've heard of kids threatening suicide because their parents took their phone away for a week. Is that insane? Is that right there may be the definition of crazy.
Do you remember the serial killer a few years ago? I forget what they called him. He had it, but it's irrelevant, I guess. But it was a big story. But he was the son of a big producer or something. But he went through and he did these manifestos.
You're talking about Kaczynski?
No, he was a kid. He was a young kid.
Okay.
I'm afraid it was somewhere in California. But in any event, his manifestos and his videos that he was making prior to killing these people and getting himself killed in the process. You know, nobody, the girls don't pay attention to me. I can't get a date. You know, it was this thing. It was, and he drove a very expensive car, because eventually the money, it didn't run out, but the money stopped being
it
the band-aid.
It doesn't satisfy.
Exactly.
And that's what happens. You know, if you look at, everyone wants to be an NBA star, or they want to be a Hollywood success. You know, if you look at the successful people in those places, they're the people that have learned to adjust to life and not make it all about the glitz and the glamour. Because look at the suicides and the drug and the look at the suicides, the drug addiction, and the alcoholism in all those places. I mean, look in Hollywood at the amount of people that are constantly going into rehab. And it's And it's because that stuff doesn't make you happy. It gets tiring.
It does. And I think on the long haul, I don't know how we fix this problem. So we're here to the in the final 14 minutes. How do we fix it?
I would encourage people, honestly, I think that you need to get back to the basics. You know, as a pastor, I'm going to tell you those basics are getting back to the Word of God and what God tells you to do. It's a very, you know, you say what you want about the Bible, say what you want about the Word of God or about religion, but I want to tell you something. If you follow the values that are in the Bible, you're not going to run in it. You're going to weather the storm because it deals with the personal, it deals with the financial, it deals with the spiritual, it deals with everything and tells you how to take that in a way that you understand why you're here, that the important things in life are not those materialistic things. If we could shake the materialism, you know, we would really begin to be happy. And I would say, Scott, to be honest with you, just start something simple. You know, I run into so many couples that are in their 30s and things are starting to really get rocky. And they'll call and say, you know, we decided to start coming to church. We got to try something. Well, I would suggest as a young person, you know, try it now. Don't wait till things get rocky. And just learn to have a more settled, simplistic spiritual life and trust God, trust Christ. I mean, I believe that Christ died for our sin as our Lord and Savior, and we don't have to live with guilt. I think another thing is that money does is we use money, we use events, we use things to suppress guilt sometimes and suppress those things that have happened to us. But, you know, the Scripture tells us that when we accept Christ, He puts our sins as far as the East is from the West. There's no reason for guilt. And guilt is something that's put out there by the devil, not by God.
Do you think this is a gender thing? Do you think it's more, it happens to a gender one more than the other?
I do not. I talked to too many depressed young men today, and I do not think it's a gender thing. I think it's a mess. And it's, our values have gotten way off kilter. There was nothing wrong. You know, when my wife and I first started out, our first house was, we lived in half of a chicken coop. And now that sounds silly, but what it was a block, originally a block chicken house that this guy made into two apartments. It cost us about $65 a month. And we had people gave us furniture. Friends did, different people, and we started and we worked and we built a life together and got what we could and when we could. And today that would be unheard of.
Do you think it's age? Do you think when you're young, you're much more willing to do that because you're starting out, you're starting your first job, you're getting out of your parents' house, but maybe when you're...
I think that's true, but you know, I'll tell you something, Scott. Here's the thing. If you don't start out at that point with that attitude, and if you don't start working towards something, you're going to end up living in that chicken coop when you're 40 if you're not careful.
Right, but now see, is that the fear in general, that they're going to end up in the chicken coop? Maybe they started out with no money and they're totally fearful of going back to that, so now they're making those decisions in their 40s and 50s.
I can give you a cure to that too. Instead of coveting the money, because I know someone very close to me that made that exact statement to me. I said, why don't you do more for other people? And their comment to me was, I'm afraid of going back to where we were when we were first married. And that floored me because I knew them when they were first married and they were happier than they are now.
That's it.
And the point is, they've coveted money, but I can give you a cure for that too if you're making a lot of money. Find every chance you can to give it away. Don't covet it. Take what you need. There's nothing wrong with building for your futures in security. Don't have to have the bigger. I know so many couples, and this is just crazy, Scott. I've seen so many couples raise their family in a mediocre, moderate house because that's what they could afford. Their kids are raised. They finally have more money than they ever had before, and they go out and they buy a monstrous four-bedroom house for the two of them to live in. Is that insane? Yeah, I don't get it. I don't get it.
Well, is that it, though? See, That comes back to the whole Constitution comparison and the cardboard box test for me. Because, yes, you don't want to be in a cardboard box, but when you are in a cardboard box with that other person and neither of you have any money, you are really watching each other's back. You are working together to fix the problem. When you have the big house and you have everything you need and you have the nice cars, you're no longer really working together
You're just afraid of losing it.
Yeah, you're just afraid of losing it. And you are almost living separate lives in a way. You get together for events and things like that, but you're living your own life. You're having your own job. And essentially, you're no longer binding with that person. And you know what brings people together sometimes in those situations is illness. Illness will either bring you together or drive you apart. It'll either put the puzzle together or smash it.
I think it was Big Daddy Weave that made a song about that, about this family, about, I think that's who it was, his family where the son had all the trophies on the wall, and the daughter had all this, and the dad had that, and the mom had that, but nobody was connecting, and they were falling apart until they realized that none of that was important. Those were not the things that they needed. And, you know, the thing is that I like what you said about when you are living in the cardboard box, you're working together. And I think that's a huge part. You have to plan together. My wife and I just had a conversation a couple weeks ago. We're probably living better right now than we've ever lived in our lives. And if I told people what I made, they say that's impossible. But you can. And but we both know that if tomorrow, if it were to all go away and we'd have to move into a one-bedroom apartment, we'd still be fine. We just have to meet our kid, all of our massive family at the park instead of our house, because we have so many of them. But, you know, the truth, we wouldn't want that. Would we be, oh, great, we get to do, oh, no, I love my house and where I live and the peace at night and sitting outside and doing those things. But is it going to define my marriage? Of course not. Is it going to define my friendships? Of course not. You know, if I took the salary that most pastors demand, if I took that, our church could not do the ministry that it does. So why are you doing that? Why don't you live in a modest way? At least the median income of your church, right? Wouldn't that make sense?
Well, yeah, yeah. Well, you know what's fascinating about this whole thing to me? What I just flashed on was high school. Now, how many people do we see in high school? You know, you have the head cheerleader dating the quarterback of the football team, and they've been dating all through high school, and they do go off to the same college, and they do propose, and there is a marriage, and they go and they start life, and they're not making so much money. Things are not so great. And then you see the person who you would have never given a look to in high school,
and they're
making all the money. And the girl, or the guy, whichever it is, in that particular situation says, oh man, I might have made the wrong decision. Now, think of the insanity of that. The person you've been with that you liked, apparently, because they were the quarterback or the head cheerleader or whatever. You've went through all this. But now, all of a sudden, you think you've made a bad choice because now that person you couldn't stand has the money? What else do you know? How do they live?
Do they really think that, or is that just a surface thought? I don't know.
I don't know, but I see that a lot.
Some examples. I really love this. My kids started out in a small way, every one of them, and have worked their way up to where they are today. And they're raising wonderful families, and they have nice, great homes and things. None of them have anything extravagant whatsoever, and they work around the clock. But it's always been a partnership between the husband and wife to, okay, let's do this. Let's sacrifice for each other. I remember when my oldest first got married to Dustin, they were both struggling. She couldn't get a good job, and he couldn't find anything that he liked or get a good job. And I went to him and I said, look, here's what I want. I got a recommendation for you guys, if you'll listen. I said, one of you work your tail off while the other one goes to school. And that's exactly what they did. And it literally, and then because of that, he was able to have a wonderful job and still does, but they worked together to do that. They weren't saying, no, I'm going to earn as much as I can, and we're going to go, you know, it wasn't that. And all of my kids have done that to an extent where, okay, there's got to be give and take in that relationship. And that true love has give and take in it.
You know, sometimes comedians, I think, are a little philosophers to a certain degree, and the best thing I ever heard about this came from a comedian once, and it was as simple as this. It says, now, It was a male comedian, and the male comedian was saying, you know, when you have a girlfriend, here's the difference between the girlfriend and the wife. The girlfriend, if it's 3 a.m. and you run out of gas on the side of the road, and you call home and you say, you wake the girlfriend up, and you say, hey, you know, I just ran out of gas. I'm out in the middle of nowhere. The girlfriend, oh my goodness, are you okay? Let me get in the car right away. I'll be right out to get you. Where are you? I'm going to pick, da-da-da, and the girlfriend will come get you and take you home. Now, same people, now they're married. The husband runs out of gas. He's 3 a.m. He's out in the middle of nowhere. He calls the wife. He says, hey, you know, wife, I'm out here in the middle of nowhere. I ran out of gas. I need you to come get me. And she says, why didn't you put gas in the car like I told you to? And those are the differences of the relationships.
Well, I can tell you after 45 years, if I called my wife at 3 o'clock in the morning and said I was on my way home and I didn't look at the gauge, she'd say, oh, brother. She said, honey, I'll be there in a few minutes.
Because it's not based in money.
It's not based in money. It's never been based in money. Don't have any, don't want any.
There you go.
I want to be able to, I like getting it, you know, but honestly, people can tell you I don't keep it very long. And I'm sorry, someone could say that's irresponsible. I disagree. I have a loving family, and I think if money got in the way, it wouldn't be as loving as it is.
You know, isn't life, and I hate to say this, for a lot of people, life is a game. And the game is, what can I get? What can I obtain? And sometimes it's financial, sometimes it's people, sometimes
it's a bad game.
It's a horrible game, but that's what it's become. What can I obtain? What can I accomplish? What can I do? That's not what people remember. You know what? The richest person, if we're just speaking in Marion, Ohio, Marion County right now, I don't know who the richest person in Marion County is.
Don't care.
No, I'm sure they live very well. It's fine. But you know what I do know? I know the people who volunteer at the Veterans Association. I know the people who volunteer at the hospital. I know the people who have spent their life giving to community projects, making people's lives better. I know those people.
You know, I've shared this maybe before on the air here. I don't know. But there was a time when we started the church, churches struggled to begin to get off. We were a few years into the church, and it was a struggle in keeping the bills paid and doing those kind of things. And I made a decision, and I prayed. And I said, you know, God, I said, and I shared this with the church, and they agreed with me. Because I was always, you know, praying for people to come that could help support the work because it was hard. And I changed that prayer to, Lord, bring anybody in that door that needs help. That needs you, that needs help. I don't care if everyone you bring in that door is dead broke and doesn't have a dime. We've never struggled since that day because it's never been about money since. Isn't that amazing?
Well, isn't there a saying somewhere, and I think that's amazing, because that people who want money will never truly have it, and people who are not driven by money
will have it.
Will have it. It just comes by, but it doesn't mean anything to them. Doesn't mean anything.
Two of my dear friends are in their 70s. She's in her 70s. He's in his 80s. The most they ever made in 1 year was $32,000 between them, and today they're financially independent.
Well, you know what? I will say this as we're getting to the end of the show here. There is somebody in this community, and I'm not going to say him by name, but true, became one of the most well-known people in the community and really never had any amount of money in their life.
Wonderful.
Now, exactly. And that, to
me... But I'm not knocking money. If you have it, I'm not slamming you.
No, and I'll go out to lunch with you, and you can pick up the...
That's
all you need to
do.
Man,
I need some new shoes.
I need some new shoes. Well, Pastor, what do we have to say here as we wrap out the program?
Hey, God bless you guys. Remember that Bible school. Get a hold of the church, 740-494-2222. And our services are at 10:30 on Sunday morning. God bless you guys. Have a good weekend.
We'll be back next week.
Chicky, Chucky, Chucky. What is that fat kid's name? Let me tell you something. I have stories that someday you'll call me, and I'll tell you the things that happened with Sullivan and I on the air.
Oh, really?
I did a routine about a